Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
You're listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Now, we're looking at information as it relates to, I'll refer first to September 6th of 2019. Do you see that?
Yes.
And what does this information represent?
It represents information that was returned by Google for the HomerMaximus at gmail.com location data.
And whose phone would be assigned to the HomerJMaximus at gmail.com?
Alex Cox.
So I start with September 6th of 2019, and it looks like it says 12:42:54. On September 6th. And what does that information suggest?
That information suggests that there was a location point located in the records for a device associated with that account to be at or near the Chad Daybell residence at that time.
Now at 12:42, it says Chad Daybell residence with that longitude and latitude.
That's correct.
Would that suggest that that device was on the Chad Daybell residence on September 6th at that time?
Yes, it would suggest it was there on the property.
And then again at 12:44?
Yes, that's correct.
And then again at 12:51?
Yes, that's correct.
Then at 12:53?
That's correct.
Now, is there any way to determine between those times whether or not at any time between the minutes between those that that device left the residence?
No.
Okay. And then at 12:55, the device associated with Alex Cox placed him on the residence or south of the residence?
That's correct.
And you put it something called Salem Pines Lane, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Any information that, do you have any information to suggest that Chad Daybell was at that location on September 6th?
I do not.
Okay. We'll go to September 9th. And on September 9th, are we still talking about the device associated with Alex Cox?
Yes, that's correct.
And at that point, we have a 9:15:43. It looks like it says south of Chad Daybell residence. Do you
yes,
see that?
That's correct.
And then at 9:21:36, Chad Daybell residence, correct?
Yes.
Now, I want to go back to the geofence. And when you talked about the geofence and the identifiers, the indication is this 9:21 is consistent with what Officer Stubbs had indicated, and Officer Balance indicated about the locator ID on the Daybell property. Is that correct?
That is correct.
I'm going to object to that question. Balance did not testify about the geofence.
Sustained.
Officer Stubbs testify about the geofence?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And then again, we show the device at 9:22:50 again, indicating the device is at the Chad Daybell residence?
That's correct.
And then at 9:26, there's a indication that the device is at the residence?
That's correct.
And then there's a gap between 9:26 and 10:39. Between 9:26 and 10:39, is there any indication that the device would still be at the Chad Daybell residence?
There's no data to show that it was there, but there's also no data to show it was not.
So it's undetermined as to whether or not the device was there or not.
That's correct.
Would it be unusual for there not to be some sort of a ping or indication that the device was there?
It depends on what's being used on the device or if the device is powered on.
Okay. And then we go to 10:41. So between 9:21 and 10:39, from 9:21 to 9:26, for that 5 minutes, we know the device was at or near the Chad Daybell residence, correct?
Can you repeat that question?
Between 9:21 and 9:26, we know that the device was at or near the Daybell residence. Is that correct?
Yes, there were three location points that showed that.
Okay. And then from 9:26 to 10:39, we can't say one way or the other where the device associated with Alex Cox was in terms of that property. Is that correct?
That's correct, not from this data.
Okay. And from 9:39 to 10:41, at that point, the device at 10:41 appears to be in the vicinity of the Daybell residence?
That's correct.
Do you recall what vicinity it was in?
I believe it was, without seeing the map that associated with this, but I believe it was near the front of it.
Okay. And then at 10:43 again?
Yes, that's correct.
And then at 10:57, we're back at the residence. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then from 10:57 to 11:39, you have some movement. Is that correct?
Yes.
So at 10:57, there's some movement. And then 11:39, you have it in the vicinity. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then moving on, you have it north of the residence. Is that right?
That's correct.
Now, I went back with you with the, in terms of Alex Cox's device showing that he's at least partially between 9:21 and 10:57, he was on the property and potentially off the property during that time, correct?
Could be.
Okay. And are you aware of any communications between any communications in terms of text messages or emails that were sent from the Chad Daybell device?
Yes.
And would those emails or text messages that were sent, would those have indicated a identification number and a location through Google by the use of that device?
They could have.
Yeah. And at no point did they indicate that by the sending of a text message through the Chad Daybell device that he was in the vicinity of the Chad Daybell property. Is that correct?
No records that I was provided showed that.
And again, September at 2:30, we have west of the Chad Daybell residence. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then south of the Chad Daybell residence?
That's correct.
If you don't have a specific recollection, but if you do have a recollection, you know how far he was from the residence?
I don't remember.
Okay. And again, we discussed this through your geofence testimony about the device of the Alex Cox device indicating that the device was on the Chad Daybell residence on September 23rd, correct?
That's correct.
And on September 23rd, you also testified that there is no geofence evidence or indication through Google or any electronic evidence suggesting that on the 23rd of September, Chad Daybell's device was there as well, correct?
No evidence I reviewed could place him at the residence.
Okay. And again, we place him at the residence from 10:55 to approximately 10:12. Is that correct?
That would be 9:55.
I'm sorry, I said 10:55. Not, thank you for correcting me. 9:55 to 10:12. Is that correct?
That is correct. Multiple time points in that time period.
We then go to the September 25, 2019. Do you see that?
Yes.
And again, we have the indication of Alex Cox's device on the Chad Daybell residence.
That's correct.
And that would have been from 10:05 on the 25th of September. Is that right?
That is correct.
To 10:24 on the 25th of September. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And again, we're referring to October 9 of 2019. And that would have been the date of the alleged paintball incident. The time that we have for Alex Cox, we didn't place him at any time on October 9th on the Daybell property. Is that correct?
The records did not.
Okay. But the records did show that he was south of the residence at 4:50, correct?
Yes, it did.
And then south again for someplace at 501, at a place called Salem Pines Lane.
That is correct.
So we have him there for 11 minutes south and east of the Daybell property, correct?
That is correct.
What is the radius for all of these?
I would have to look at it, but I believe it's 1.4 miles.
Okay. So 1.4 miles from the Daybell residence, that would be the marker for what you use to establish contact or lack of contact.
That's the radius we used around the Daybell residence to associate to whether there was a time point that would be associated with this data.
Now, previously you saw from I believe it was Officer Stubbs, they used a 2.6 or a 3 mile radius for theirs in terms of location data for Mr. Daybell.
Objection misstates the evidence.
Sustained.
Do you recall what the radius that was used by Officer Stubbs in his report?
250 meters.
250 meters. And the significance of going out to a larger radius would have been what?
It would just capture more location points of the device.
Does it affect the accuracy by just expanding the radius of how far you go out to determine this?
No.
So there's nothing in terms of accuracy that changes as a result of just going further out to try to gain more location points for, at least for Alex Cox's phone. Is that correct?
That's correct. The accuracy would be a separate reading. This was just putting points within a specific radius.
Okay. And then we didn't include this on the report, but you also reviewed information as it related to October 19th in regards to the device of Alex Cox. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And what were your findings in regards to October 19th?
There was no indication that it was at or near the property based on our findings, which is why it's not in our report.
Okay. And in, when you say at or, that there was no indication that the Alex Cox device was there on the 19th, that is within a 1.5 mile radius of his property?
1.4
mile radius of his property?
That's correct.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the concept of drive testing.
Okay.
You heard some testimony previously about the drive testing that was conducted as part of this case. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And in your review, did you come to some determinations as to what your understanding of what they did in terms of the drive testing?
Yes, I did.
What indications did you arrive at?
So the drive testing that was completed showed the coverage area for multiple towers surrounding that area. What that does is it shows you the coverage area that could be used by a device. It does not show you RF signal strength or signal strength from a device, but also what the coverage area does is from a drive test just allows you to see where you would be able to potentially reach a tower if you were to utilize your device across the cellular network.
Okay. So in other words, when you're talking about towers, if there's a certain angle, and let's say it's a 120-degree angle,
yes,
that angle goes out for an extended period of time.
It does.
And wherever there may be overlap or otherwise, the distance that goes out determines a significantly large area for cell tower testing, right?
That is correct. And the difference in listening to the testimony about the drive test was when it was discussed about...
Objection, this is non-responsive to a question.
Stain.
So based on the testimony that you heard about the drive testing, what were your concerns?
My concerns were the 5 degrees beam width difference that was reported between 2019 and 2020.
Okay. And when you say 5 degrees difference, what would that affect?
Well, it wasn't explained which way it was 5 degrees. So when you look at that sector, it's 60 degrees counterclockwise and 60 degrees clockwise. And without knowing the 5 degrees that it was off, it could change dramatically that coverage area depending on how far away a device would have been from the tower when it was made from that sector.
So for the use of drive testing, would that be, and given the what you've just under given what you just stated, would that cause a concern about the reliability of drive testing?
It wouldn't cause a concern for reliability about drive testing itself. I would just wonder if the 5 degrees was taken into account for the mapping of the drive testing.
Okay.
For presentation purposes.
Is drive testing considered a scientific test?
Drive testing is used by the mobile network carriers and providers to test power coverage for signals.
It's not to be used to determine the location of a device to any extent of accuracy. Would that be fair?
The drive test itself can't locate the device. It only shows tower coverage.
Okay. There was some discussion about something called Gladiator Forensics. You recall that?
Yes.
And you recall that I believe it was Agent Balance talked about the availability of Gladiator Forensics to the public to test devices.
Yes, that's correct.
Did you look into the availability of Gladiator Forensics for someone like your corporation or the public?
I did.
And what did you find?
They responded to me that it is law enforcement and government only.
So is there any way to challenge the reliability of Gladiator Forensics or their testing without a law enforcement license to do so?
Not with their tool.
Okay. So in other words, when some of the testimony regarding data, regarding phone coverage, regarding all of those things, you wouldn't, given that they use the tool of Gladiator Forensics, you would not be able to challenge and we would have to rely on solely what they claim to be the information. Would that be correct?
You can take that data and map it utilizing other tools, but that doesn't mean that the algorithms that their tool is using will be the same. So the results may or may not show based on what is being set up inside the tool by the manufacturer for the parsing of that data. So not testing it with the same tool does not necessarily give you a reliable accuracy based on the tool they used.
Okay. So if there was a representation that Gladiator Forensics could be purchased by anyone for use, would that have been an inaccurate statement?
Objection, misstates the testimony. That was never said.
Sustained.
Do you recall Officer Balenz talking about the availability of Gladiator Forensics?
I do.
And what do you recall him saying?
He said that their tools are not, but the tools that you use to do drive testing, meaning the antennas, the signals, and they talk about it, you know, being calibrated by Rhodes and Swartz for the drive test tools. Which I also reached out through Rhodes and Swartz and through their distributors and was told that I could not purchase those either.
So we have to rely on law enforcement's representations as to the total accuracy of anything they're suggesting. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay. Rich, can I utilize the Elmo again?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. There is some reference here to based on records that you obtained about communications. Do you recall who these communications were?
You're talking on the screen September 1st, October 31st?
Yes.
Like through those dates?
Yes.
Yes.
Did you detail the communications that took place when Alex Cox was identified to be at the vicinity or in the vicinity of the Dayville residence?
I did.
Okay. And you identified those by date. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So on September 9th, there's one voice call. Is that correct?
That is correct.
On September 22nd, there were 8 text messages, one voice call.
That is correct.
On September 23rd, there was one voice call.
That is correct.
And October 9th, there's 13 text messages, 0 voice calls.
That is correct.
You didn't identify, those could potentially be to a number of different people. Would that be fair? They aren't necessarily Alex Cox calling the same person, right?
They are not.
Okay. And that was based on the data that you had at the time. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And Judge, at this time, I have no further questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pryor. All right. Mr. Wood, cross-examination.
I can be handed Defense Exhibit 139.
Yes.
And Your Honor, because of the digital nature of that, it may take me a minute to set up.
Okay.
And if I could also be handed States Exhibit 156 and 229 and 186.
All right. We'll work on getting those located and getting them delivered to you, Mr. Wood.
Thank you. And if it's all right, I'm going to wait till to start until I have the exhibit so I can do it in a succinct fashion.
That's fine. We'll go ahead and get things located and wait.
There we go. Good morning, Mr. Eller.
Good morning, sir.
Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You don't need to call me sir.
Just habit.
I get it. I want to talk to you about September 9th, 2019, and the work you did in this case for that date. Are you aware of the significance of the date of September 9th, 2019?
Yes.
Are you aware, through your investigation, of the last known sighting of Tylee Ryan?
I am.
And that was September 8th, 2019, correct?
That's correct.
In preparation for your testimony, you created, we just went over a written report you did, you created visual representations of the data you mapped, correct?
That's correct.
And Your Honor, may I publish?
Yes. Which exhibit?
This would be States Exhibit 139. And in fact, maybe we need to have a sidebar about the labeling of this, because there's subparts on this exhibit. There's 14 subparts.
Previously admitted?
Yes, of 139 defense exhibit.
Okay. Feel free to just continue, Mr. Wood. If we have questions, we can
do a
sidebar. But
perfect.
If you can, for the clarity of the record, reference any sub-exhibits.
Okay. And I would list this as Defense Exhibit 139, Sub 3. And Mr. Eller, does this look familiar to you?
Yes, it does.
This is the report you created, correct?
This is a slideshow that represents data from the report, yes.
Thank you. That's the more accurate way to say it. What does this slide represent?
As far as?
What's the data being portrayed on that slide?
It's just showing locations.
Okay. And are these locations related to the Homer J. Maximus Google account?
Yes.
Right. And I've clicked on, is this video? There's a video embedded in this.
That's correct.
Can you tell the jury what this video shows?
Yes. The video would show the time frame represented and the points on when they would show on the map during that time frame.
All right. And this slide, what time frame does this cover?
I would have to see the slider for the video.
If I start playing it, would that aid you?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to play it.
That entry said 0915.
Okay. And is there indeed a label up here that says this is at Chad Daybell's residence?
That's correct.
I want to go back to earlier in the day. What does this video show? In fact, is it labeled?
It says video of all Google location data for September 9th.
All right. So if we were to play this video, it would show all of the Homer J. Maximus location hits that you mapped out.
For that date.
For that date. Correct. For September 9th. Yes. And did you put any limiting margin of error on these?
Yes.
Okay. And was that the 500 meters?
That's correct.
Thank you. So I'm going to start playing this video. And I'm going to move it to about two minutes and 42 seconds. I'm going to start at 2:38. Can you make out what that data point is?
It is a Wi-Fi data point.
Okay. And where is it located?
In the vicinity of Lori Vallow and Alex Cox's residence, I believe.
All right. And can you pinpoint which residence it is at?
No, not based on the visual representation on the screen.
Right. Let me ask you this. Did you locate any data suggesting that the Homer J. Maximus account on the morning of September 9th, early morning of September 9th, went to apartment 175?
Did I map that out? No, I don't believe so.
Okay. Are you aware that a device associated with Homer J. Maximus was at 107, apartment 107, Alex's apartment, mm-hmm. in the early morning of September 9th?
Correct.
And then in the early morning hours went to apartment 175.
That's correct. Okay. Yes.
And it was there. Do you know approximately how long it was there?
Not without looking at the records.
Okay.
It was several hours, I believe.
Okay. Thank you. So he was there for some time in the early morning hours.
That's correct.
I want to talk about a little bit later in that day. You You did some work detailing, Your Honor, if I could unpublish for a moment.
Yes.
Phone calls that were made between Chad Daybell and Alex Cox, or numbers known to be associated with the Chad Daybell and Alex Cox, correct?
That's correct.
And honor, Your Honor, if I could republish.
Yes.
This chart, this shows a calling number, or this shows a phone call at 8:11 a.m., correct?
Yes, it does.
And the calling number is 208-690-9374, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And that is a number associated with Chad Daybell, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And he calls 480-351-9120.
That's correct.
And that is a number associated with Alex Cox and the Homer J. Maximus account, correct?
That is correct.
And again, so that's at 8:11. Do you recall what time Alex Cox first shows up on Chad Daybell's property on September 9th?
I believe it is approximately 9:21.
So if we watched this video you prepared, it would tell us, correct?
I believe so.
Okay. And I'm going to pause when it first shows. So this data point that appears just south of Chad Daybell's residence.
That's correct.
And what is the time on that?
9:15.
All right. And what time was the phone call made from Chad to Alex?
I believe 8:11.
Yes, correct. Thank you. I'm going to play it again. And so what time?
9:21.
Does this show that Alex Cox's phone shows up on Chad Daybell's property?
9:21.
Okay. And this was also reflected in the cast report, correct, that you reviewed?
That's correct.
So just really quick, as we do this, the cast report used some different parameters than you did, correct?
That's correct.
So they used a 100-meter margin of error, and you used a 500-meter margin of error.
That's correct. There was 100 for that, 150, 250, 500 across all the different reports.
Right, and I'm just speaking about the cast.
Yes, that's correct.
And for different purposes, you might use a different margin of error, correct?
That's correct.
And at different points in an investigation, you might rely on different margins of error depending on what you're trying to do, correct?
Yes.
And so there's nothing invalid about using a 100-meter margin of error or a 500-meter margin of error, correct?
No, there's nothing invalid about either.
And Your Honor, I am going to now go to State's Exhibit 156, the cast report. And you reviewed this cast report, correct?
Could you clarify the exhibit number, Mr. Wood?
156.
156, thank you.
No, it's not sure. You reviewed this cast report, correct, as part of your investigation?
Yes, once I received it.
So, and you recognize this slide?
Yes, I do.
And this slide shows in general some of the same data we were just looking at on the slide you presented.
That's correct.
And so just again, on September 9th, what you've established and what's also in the cast report is that Chad Daybell made a phone call to Alex Cox at 11 a.m.
At 8:11?
Thank you. At 8:11 a.m. And then just a little more than an hour later, Alex Cox, or a phone associated with him or a device associated with him, shows up at Chad Daybell's property.
That's correct.
Are you familiar with the burial location of Tylee Ryan?
Based on the testimony and the evidence I reviewed, yes.
And in fact, did you map that out as well, correct?
That's correct.
And you would agree that some of these location points for the Homer J. Maximus account are in close proximity to both the burn pit on Chad Daybell's property and Tylee Ryan, and the final location spot for Tylee Ryan?
Yes.
As part of your investigation, you said you reviewed many devices.
Devices and records, yes.
And records, okay. In fact, real quick, I want to ask you about that. In your report, actually, I guess it's... can you tell us approximately which devices you reviewed?
Oh,
is it too large of a number?
It's a large list. I mean, it was almost 10 terabytes of data that was turned over.
Okay. Yeah. And massive undertaking, correct?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
And it's difficult for any one person to get through all of that material, correct?
I spent a lot of late nights over Christmas going through data that was turned over, yes.
Okay. Did you review a cell phone belonging to Tammy Daybell?
I don't remember at this time.
Okay, that's fine. You talked about not having any information, any geolocation data from Chad Daybell that placed him on the property, correct?
That's correct.
Are you aware that he sent a text to his wife that placed him on the property?
Yes, but that doesn't place him on the property.
Are you aware that in his text he talks about burning limbs in a fire pit?
Yes.
And are you aware that he talks about shooting a raccoon?
Yes.
And that he talks about burying it in a pet cemetery?
Yes.
And are you aware that there was a pet cemetery on his property?
Yes.
And are you aware that that pet cemetery is the same location that Tylee Ryan was located?
Yes.
And are you aware, Mr. Eller, that upon finding that text message from Chad Daybell to his wife and combining that data with the data that you see right now and data that you've mapped as well was how law enforcement found.
That's objection, speculation, and argumentative.
I'm asking if he's aware.
Mr. Wood, first, let me make a ruling. And before you make response, please. So the objection is overruled.
Okay. I'll ask the question again. Mr. Eller, are you aware that upon finding that email, or I'm sorry, that text from Chad Daybell to Tammy Daybell sent on September 9th, and looking at that data with the data that's placed on the screen right now, similar to data you've mapped, was how law enforcement found Tylee Ryan?
No.
Would it surprise you that that information was how law enforcement
Judge, found I'm going to object at this point. Calls for speculation.
Sustained.
Let's talk about September 23rd. And Your Honor, if I could unpublish for a minute.
You may.
And I apologize for the pauses. There's just a lot of digital data to be working with.
Understand.
I'm going to start with what would be marked as Defense Exhibit 139, subpart 13. And if I could publish at this point.
You may.
Mr. Eller, do you recognize this chart?
Yes.
And at the bottom of that chart, there's a call record that's been, there's some details provided for.
Yes.
Who is the calling number? Let me rephrase that. What is the calling number?
The calling number is 208-690-9374.
And is it correct that that number is associated with Chad Daybell?
Yes, that's correct.
And who is the call, or what is the called number?
480-351-9120.
And is it correct that that number is associated with Alex Cox?
Yes, that's correct.
And what time was that call?
0925.
And going back to your report on September 23rd, the information you were provided placed the Homer J. Maximus or a device associated with Homer J. Maximus on Chad Daybell's property that morning, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And it first showed up at 9:55 in the morning, correct?
I believe so.
So we have a situation here similar to...
Objection, argumentative.
Sustained.
Okay. So there's a phone call made from Chad Daybell to Alex Cox at 9:25.
Yes.
Or numbers associated with them.
That's correct.
At 9:55, Alex Cox or a phone number or a device associated with them shows up on Chad Daybell's property.
That's correct.
Are you aware of the significance of September 23rd, 2019?
Yes.
What is that?
That is... the day after the last sighting, I believe, of JJ.
Your Honor, if I could unpublish for a moment.
You may.
And I will be publishing from Defense Exhibit 139, subpart 5. And Your Honor, if I could publish.
You may.
Mr. Eller, do you recognize this slide?
Yes, I do.
Could you read the label of it?
Video of Google location data at Chad Daybell's residence on September 23rd, 2019.
And you prepared this video by mapping?
Yes, that's correct.
Of Homer J. Maximus, correct?
That's correct.
So I'm going to push play. And can you describe where I just paused, what the data being presented is?
Yes, that is a Wi-Fi location point with an accuracy of 50 meters on 9:23 at 0955.
And I'm going to push play again. And can you describe the data being represented here?
Yes, that is a GPS location point on 9:23 at 9:56 with an accuracy of 4 meters.
And would you agree that that location is close to the final or the spot where JJ Vallow's body was found?
Yes.
In fact, could you point with your marker? I believe you have it marked on that screen. could you point to the location of JJ's body? Okay, thank you. And I'm pushing play again and stopping. And what's the data here?
That is a location point from a Wi-Fi source with 100 meter accuracy on 923 at 957.
And so at this point, is it fair to say that that device could have been located anywhere within that circle?
Yes.
I'm pushing play again. What is the data being represented here?
That is a location point that's GPS on 923 at 10:02 with 3 meter accuracy.
Thank you. And I'm pushing play again. And is this another spot you mapped? We don't need to list out all the details, but this was
yes.
Another spot you mapped. And this was at 10:05, correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. I'm pushing play again. This was a spot at 10:07 that you mapped?
That's correct.
It appears to be on the southwest corner of the property?
Yes.
But with it, that's a 92-meter
radius. Yes.
Thank you. Again, one more spot that you mapped at 10:12.
That is correct.
So you would agree with me that the Homer J. Maximus account that you mapped on September 9th shows spots close to the location of Tylee Ryan's body where it was located, correct?
You said September 9th, yes.
Yeah, I'm going back to September 9th. I'm not trying to confuse you.
Okay.
Going back to September 9th.
Yes.
And on September 23rd, the Homer J. Maximus account is located... shows at least 2 points very close to the location of where JJ's body was located.
Yes.
And on both those days, within close to an hour of when the Homer J. Maximus account shows up on Chad Daybell's residence, Chad Daybell called Alex Cox.
That's correct.
Let me be specific. A phone number associated with Chad Daybell called a phone number associated with Alex Cox.
That's correct.
And just to be clear, you also, for this date, you also as well mapped out the whole day of geolocation data, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And I'm not going to play it right now, but so that you could actually watch Chad Daybell's movements throughout
the day. Objection, Judge.
Overruled.
Judge, mischaracterization?
The question's not done yet. So at this stage, I'm overruling an objection. Go ahead, Mr. Wood.
Let me rephrase that either way. You can watch on these videos you prepared. The location, I'm not going to say in real time because it's in shortened time, but of the location data of the Homer J. Maximus account.
That's correct.
And we talked about methodologies earlier, how sometimes in a different investigation, you might use one methodology, you might use something else for another investigation. And there's valid reasons to be using different methodologies, correct?
Yes.
And in this case, to determine when you would map out the Homer J. Maximus account as it relates to Chad Daybell's property, you drew a 1.4-mile circle around Chad Daybell's property.
That's correct.
And any time the Homer J. Maximus account showed up in there, you would make note of that. Let me rephrase that. I think you know what I'm trying to say, right? Once the Homer J. Maximus account showed up in there, if it had less than a 500 meter margin of error, you mapped it.
Yes, that's correct.
Defense counsel spoke with you briefly about October 9th.
Yes.
And I would note in your report, and it's in there, that you disagree with the FBI about the number of text messages that were exchanged between Alex and Chad.
That's correct.
Even based on what you found.
That's correct.
Yeah. And based on what you found, you show that 13 text messages were exchanged between Chad Daybell and Alex Cox on October 9th.
That's correct.
And you're aware that that same day, Tammy Daybell reported being shot at by a paintball gun.
I didn't know that it was shot at. That's not what my understanding of it is.
Okay. But you're aware there was that incident.
That's correct.
Okay. And at the time of that incident, the Homer J. Maximus account, as far as you can tell, was located in Rexburg, correct?
That is, well, what I can tell is that it was not within that radius.
Okay, that's fair. So it wasn't in that 1.4-mile radius.
That's correct.
So you didn't map out where else it went?
I did, but okay. It was not reported for the purpose of that report for that radius around the residence.
So you did, for the purposes of your investigation, you mapped it out. It's not on your report.
That's correct.
Okay. And that's fair. Are you aware through the Homer J. Maximus account where Alex Cox went earlier that day in Idaho Falls?
I believe so, yes.
Are you aware that he went to a Sportsman's Warehouse?
Yes. Okay.
Did you review any reports on what he purchased while he was there?
I believe it was in the discovery, yes.
Okay. Now, with your 1.4 mile radius, that excluded the Homer J. Maximus account for October 18th, correct?
That is correct.
But are you aware, or were you aware, that the Homer J. Maximus account was located 2.5 to 2.6 miles just south of Chad Daybell's residence that night?
At Salem Church, yes.
Yes. Okay, thank you. And you're aware that multiple text messages were shared between Chad Daybell and Alex Cox that night?
Yes.
And they were on phones that they had both activated on October 9th. Were you aware of that?
Yes.
And is it because of the 1.4 mile radius that you did not include those text messages in your report?
That's correct.
Really quick on the geofence. Mr. Pryor talked with you about Detective Stubbs' testimony that Google informed him they would only return information on a specific number of Google IDs.
Yes, that's correct. I was a little confused at first because there's been a bunch of numbers and none of them were the same.
Okay. And it was your testimony that you're not familiar with Google doing that.
I'm not familiar with them limiting what we're asking them to describe or provide subscriber information for. That is correct.
But that doesn't mean that's not what they said to Mr. Stubbs.
That's correct. I've seen no documentation from Google that said that they asked for that either, though.
Okay. That was based on his testimony.
Correct. I'm just saying from the Google responses, their returns and the emails that went back and forth through LERS, I didn't see anything where they said that they were limiting that.
Okay. And again, that information is just based on Detective Stubbs' testimony.
Correct.
And you do agree that in that geofence, the Homer J. Maximus account does show up on Chad Daybell's property?
Yes.
In fact, it's similar to these areas you've mapped.
Yes, I think identical.
Yes. And are you aware of, through your review of the discovery, Alex Cox's relationship with Chad Daybell?
I believe he's his brother-in-law.
Yeah. Well, he was his brother-in-law, correct?
Correct.
You're aware that Alex Cox is deceased?
Yes, sorry.
No, that's okay. Did you review any iCloud accounts belonging to Lori Vallow?
I did.
Did you listen to any audio of blessings being given by Chad Daybell?
Judge, I'm going to object at this point. It goes beyond the scope of direct examination.
Sustain.
May I briefly argue, Your Honor?
Yes. Go ahead, Mr. Wood.
I'm asking about digital evidence he's reviewed, which was the substance of his testimony.
Judge, that's a broad sweep.
Yeah, I think it's outside the scope of anything brought up on direct, Mr. Wood, at this point.
Okay, thank you. That's fine. And you testified you were unable to find any geolocation data for Chad Daybell?
That's correct.
And you're aware through your review that Chad Daybell used multiple phones?
Yes.
Your Honor, I have no further questions at this time.
All right. Thank you, Mr.
I have multiple exhibits here to return to the court.
Very well.
Permission to approach the podium?
You may.
Mr. Eller, Prosecutor Wood indicated that there was a phone call at 8:11 from Chad Daybell to Alex Cox.
Yes.
Do you have any information that the warrants that they obtained from Google would have included data information from that phone call?
No.
In fact, there was no data information that they investigated regarding that phone call. Is that correct?
I believe that there would have been a record, a cell tower transmission record for the call.
Okay. But there would be no identifiable way to say the location of Mr. Daybell's phone. Is that right?
Not an exact location, no.
And then that applies to the 923 as well. Is that correct?
That's correct.
On those phone calls, is there any indication, in fact, all of these phone calls that were referenced, is there any indication whatsoever of what was discussed on those phone calls?
No.
Okay. And again, on 9-9 and 9-23, during the time that Alex Cox's phone is showing he's on the Chad Daybell property, Do you have any electronic information or data of any kind to suggest that Chad Daybell's device was on the property at the same exact time?
No.
Nothing else, Judge.
Thank you. All right, that'll conclude the testimony of Mr. Eller then. Are we going to have him remaining under subpoena from the defense?
No, Judge, he's excluded. He's excused. Thank you, Mr. Eller, for the defense.
State.
The state doesn't have him under subpoena, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. That concludes your testimony. Thank you for appearing and testifying today. You can go ahead and step down.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, the defense may call its next witness, Mr. Pryor.
And Judge, I may need a minute to see if he's arrived.
Okay.
He's here. I've been told he's here. May I have again permission to approach the podium, Judge?
Yes.
And if the court would allow me, when I may proceed.
Yeah. Well,
Judge, the defense would call Dr. Greg Hampinkian.
Very well.
And Judge, while we're waiting for Dr. Hampinkian, there was a stipulated exhibit that the court had delayed ruling on, the Atria. It was a 49A. It's in the possession of the clerk. I'm asking at this point, my understanding is that by stipulation of the parties that exhibit would be admitted.
Which prosecutor is responding on this?
I am, Your Honor, and I'd ask for a sidebar real quick.
Very well.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.